Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Vitor Productions presenting Urban America, and my name is King Jones. Now, all you people that are listening to the laptop, up the corner, 516-531-9540. That's 516-531-9540. Now, we had caught Steve or Provocative Door by 8 o'clock on Tuesday. We had myself and Black America and also thank you for support. And I hope everyone is safe during this social isolation or social distancing. Matter of fact, our guest tonight is going to be about the virus and how it relates to mental health. She changed the game plan on me, but that's okay. I'm up. Come up. There will be a survey that will be providing what products and services would like to hear by our schools, because we'll be seeing advertisers and sponsorship pretty soon. Again, my school was going to discuss a subject, that we buy in the Black community, be quiet. We were going to talk about anxiety and depression. I don't know if we're going to discuss that now. my guest has a LCSW. She is a licensed clinical social worker. She is the author of a book of I Signed My Own Place to Live. And I'd like to welcome Miss Debbie Byron. Do me a favor, just press one, because I have several phone numbers up here. Okay, she's 678. Okay. Well, good evening, Miss Byron.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm doing well. I hope you're safe.
Ms. Yes, Byron? I'm doing well, sir. I'm here.
I hope you're safe. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. I'm safe. I'm sorry you're going in and out a bit. I apologize about that.
Okay. You can hear me well now?
I hear you. I hear you much better now, yes.
Okay. A couple weeks ago, I spoke to you. You said you wanted to talk about depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And after all this research about depression and anxiety in the Black community, you switch up on me. You want to talk about the virus affecting our mental health. So, therefore, I have been keeping up with all the different aspects, different perception about the virus. What would
yes.
you like? Well, first of all, tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Natalie Bryan. I am a licensed clinical social worker, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I have been in the field in health and human services.
Excuse me, what part of Brooklyn?
Could you repeat that, sir?
What part of Brooklyn?
Brownsville, Brooklyn.
That's my hometown, Brownsville, Westside. I used to work for the Brownsville Guardians. And I worked for Brooklyn Community Service.
Yep, Brownsville, Brooklyn. That's where I'm from, right on Mother Gaston.
Mother Gaston, right on the corner from Broadway. Right on the L train, Julius, the hatred the four.
The number three, yes. Number two and three, yep.
Oh, the three and the four came down. Number two went the other way.
Yes, you're right. It's been a minute. I'm in Georgia now. I'm a Georgia peach now.
Okay.
I went to Claire Martin, which is in the middle of Bed-Stuy. I've been in Georgia 5 years this year, but my high school was Clara Barton. I was right in the middle of Bed-Stuy.
Okay. I know about the school. I had a lot of kids there. Clara Barton. Okay. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know how you go to work, but back in that was a rough either your best style club was really a rough temper.
You're breaking up a bit. You're going in and out. So I just wanted to
Nope,
I hear you. Go ahead. Repeat what you're saying again.
I said that back in the 80s and 90s, that whole Bed-Stuy, Brownsville, it was territory.
Yeah.
Huh?
I remember that. It was, this thing was definitely different in the 80s and the 90s.
It was back then?
Mm-hmm.
He was back then. Are you listening to me on speaker?
No, I don't have you on speaker, but you're going in and out, so it's just a little bit difficult to hear your voice.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure what the connection is.
Okay. I'm coming through now.
It's still going in and out. How about I try to reconnect and see if that's better? Yeah, I'll just try to reconnect and see if that'll be better, okay?
Okay. Oh, I'm gassy. And where you are, it's like four different projects in that whole area, and those projects are notorious. Okay. How am I coming now? Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, okay. I thought I had the guest on. Sorry about that. Let me put you back in queue. The area that provides services in Brooklyn, it's a big area, and we have a connection problem and everything. So I'm waiting for her to return the call so we can get this interview started. Miss is going to be speaking about this virus affect mental health in our communities and everything. So I'll just wait for her to call, get on with you. But be heard now. Ms. Byron?
I'm back. I'm back.
Welcome back.
A little bit better. It sounds a little bit better.
How do you think this virus is affecting our communities from a mental health standpoint?
Well, our community, we have kind of that post traumatic slave syndrome. I know people talk about PTSD, they think about military and things like that. But when I think about how we engage mental health and healthcare overall, it's very, I'm not going to get help for myself unless, like, I got a broken leg or I'm bleeding out or I'm dying. You know, mental health has a real stigma in our community. So, you know, if you're having mental health.
Long time.
Yeah, but I mean, even to this day, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, even to this day, to this very day, people are still embarrassed about seeing a therapist, you know. So, I mean, we're educating and it's becoming more regular, but it's taken us so long to just hit the tip of the iceberg. Our community, they're still embarrassed, and they're embarrassed because they're not educated on what the benefits of mental health are. Most people are going to mental health because they've seen their favorite basketball player saying they see a therapist, or their favorite actor, or their favorite person. And but a lot of people still hide going to see a therapist. There's a shame in it because they're seen as weak. And that is another thing. There is this preconceived notion that we're supposed to be strong all the time without any faults, without any issues. And we're human. You know, we all have weaknesses. We all have kinks in our armor. We can't be the super person forever. And we don't allow ourselves to get help to heal. So we just perpetuate traumas on top of traumas in our community.
Through the clinical, the black clinicians, why do you think that black folks don't want people to know that they're going to therapy? Or they have some type of mental health issues within the household?
Well, I think it's a part of the history of shame. You know, back in the days when a family member had mental health issues, they were institutionalized or they were hidden. You know, it was never something that was spoken about publicly. Most black households or households of color, you know, whatever happens in the house stays in the house. So a lot of times there were no examples that getting help and assistance was something that was a normalcy. You know, if you did do something, you sold out, or you didn't think that God could quote unquote heal it or fix the demons. You know, so it's a lot of cultural stuff that kept our community in a perpetual sense of really insanity. Because insanity is the only thing that you do over and over and over again, expecting a different result. And that's what we have done to ourselves within our community by not educating ourselves and changing that dynamic so that our next generation can be better than where we were. You know, we're starting to see some turn in the tide, but it's after major pushes from, like I said, STARS, some agencies, you know, some community initiatives. Another issue is affordability. You know, a lot of people in our community can't afford co-pays that may go along with insurance premiums, or don't have insurance coverage to cover the session, because a session with a therapist can run anywhere from $65 to $150 an hour session, depending on the therapist that you have. So affordability is another issue. And then accessibility, you know, having clinicians of color within the community. You know, a lot of times people don't want to divulge their stuff to someone who's not of color. However, they don't always see a person of color in their community that they may be able to identify with to say, okay, she may understand my plight because we may have some similar background. But even if we don't have a similar background, she's black like me. She can identify with some experiences that I may have.
Yeah, I'm with you, hold it right there. Color.
Yes.
Sorry about that. I'm sorry, we had a technical problem. I don't know. This blog talk, you know, this blog talk is not really dependable. As a matter of fact, after this pandemic is over, you know, we're going to be switching platforms with that's more reliable. There's always something going on with this blog talk platform. But getting back to my question. I know black clinicians use Freud, Skinner, Erickson, and that guy that do the stages of development. Are there models today that deal with the black experience?
They do have models that deal with the black experience, but I'm not going to tell you the truth. A lot of clinical testing and stuff, honestly, that information is based on a test subject series of primarily Caucasian males. Now, most tests do have other tests to kind of scale it. Like, for example, some tests have a Hispanic bent to it, so it can be askew to a Hispanic culture. And they are creating ones for just people of color. But it's, I don't know if there's any specifically identified for the African-American community. And yes,
so you think there should be a test or a model that focuses on our experience? I mean, Freud was all about the sex and having dreams about his moms. You know, I mean, I don't know any black fellow that had dreams, sexual dreams about their mother, but in their stages of development. But do we need more models and ideologies and theories that address our experiences?
I do believe we need some things that are more focused on the African-American community culture. But I do think also the basis of human development can be found within those major ideologies, which is why they're still impactful and useful of today. Yes, we go to different approaches. Like when you're doing therapy with an individual, I'm not going to say, everybody gets CBT or everybody gets DBT or everybody gets solution focused or whatever. When I sit down with my client, my clinician's assessment is based on that client and that client's need and what we're trying to work on to achieve whatever goal or outcome that they desire. And that could be pulling from several different models. So human development-wise, you will see it evidentiary that a lot of the models that are there, not every single one, but many of them that are there currently, you will find that they are accurate. Now, as in development-wise, as in cultural, that is still to be determined. But when you are talking about development, you're talking about attachment, you're talking about things that are significant, those things you can have foundation on and then build on your own knowledge base of culture for that person.
Okay. Ms. Byron, what is depression? Do the African-American community suffers from a high level of depression and anxiety?
Absolutely.
Why?
We do suffer from depression.
What are some of the factors that are Are blacks really aware of the systems and the nature of depression and anxiety?
I don't know if they are culturally aware only because of the lack of education within the black community about mental health. I think depression and anxiety and that language is becoming more prevalent, as I say now. But I think a lot of the times we as African Americans don't even realize that we're in a depressive state because we have learned to cope no matter what. And like I said, to me, that stems from the post-traumatic slave syndrome. We have been reared to do what we have to do to get what we need done. You know what I'm saying? So when we're like that, even when we're tired, even when there's just nothing left, even when, you know, it's we got to do what we got to do because either there's nobody else or either there's no time to show weakness, or there's no time to fall apart because you have kids to take care of or because you have bills to pay and things of that nature. So I think that we are always in this cycle of self-preservation, even to our own detriment.
Can you explain a little bit about post-stress slave disorder or syndrome?
Post-traumatic slave syndrome?
Yes, post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Okay.
Yes.
So, I mean, honestly, it is just really, it's a book or a theory that was developed by Dr. Groy, Dr. Joy DeGroy. And it really is a research that has been done on how slavery still impacts us today, and it was research that was done over 12 years. So just to pull up what the definition was, it is a theory that explains the ideology of many adaptive survival behaviors in the African-American community throughout the United States and the diaspora. So it's just how we have coped with the trauma of slavery, which when you're dealing with trauma, you're triggered by so many different things. You know what I'm saying? Even if it was, think of being in a car accident and you were in a bad car accident. You survived. You may not have broken any bones, but how hard was it for you to get back in the driver's seat? Or how did you feel when another car came too close to you? Or what about, you know what I'm saying? So there's still trauma there. There's memory there, you know, and there's a reaction there. And a lot of times we don't recognize that in the span of today and how we live, we are impacted by the residual of slavery, you know, culturally. And how we're bold enough, how there is such a wide financial gap, us not knowing about generational wealth, us going, you know what I'm saying? It's learned behavior. And even with mental health, it's learned behavior. Most people don't recognize that they have family members that are functioning with mental health disorders. They just feel that that's how their family member is, and they've learned those behaviors and those coping mechanisms, and then they meet with someone who may have a healthier outlook on life because they didn't have that, and they feel like, wait, that's not how you do that. That's odd. When the truth of the matter is, no one identifies to this person that they may be struggling with, you know, really learned behavior under someone who is dealing with mental health. So if you've learned how to cope inappropriately, then you'll adult inappropriately. You'll work inappropriately unless you're working to correct that. But how do you know that that's inappropriate if you're in the same environment that's fostering that?
Right, right. Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. For another example that I will bring up with post-traumatic slave syndrome is the man not being in the home.
Yeah, majorly. And I've always spoken about it.
And the man being loyal to his wife or his woman. That's a learned behavior that's been over 100 years, going from from woman to woman and making all kinds of children and not providing the care for the children.
I thought about that for a really long time, and even in discussing that, we don't recognize that stuff is not only cultural through post, but it's systematic. You know, it's the systems that we're dealing with. You know, we came up, if you look back at the Black family in the 60s, in the 70s, when the movements were going on for civil rights, they were whole. You know what I'm saying? A lot of the breakup of the Black family came through the crack epidemic and came through welfare.
Right.
So when the crack epidemic happened and most people were losing mothers, fathers, kids, you know, people were fending for themselves, kind of. So we lost a lot of our parents in that environment. And then systems came along to say, hey, we'll help you get a foot up, but dad can't be in the home. You know, it just has to be you and the kids. Or if it's a dad, it's just you and the kids, or it's the grandparent. And then we learned that, hey, if we're going to get the help that we need, which is learned behavior, so now we're learning to depend on a system and then learning the rules of that system to live within the confines of that system. And a lot of times you'll see that that system is generational, which was why it was created, to keep you in that perpetual spin. Hey, you can't make more than this amount of money or you won't be entitled to housing. So then that means I'm not going to try to push past wealth, because then I may not be able to afford this apartment working on my own. And I have the kids to take care of. So you're never going to strive for more if it's kind of made comfortable for you to be here. And even though you want better, unless you're doing things outside of the box to learn, hey, I don't want to be stuck in this because I see my grandmother did it, my mom did it, and now I'm here. I don't want my kids to think that this is what life is. But not many of us will take that risk to step outside of that, because it has become a safety blanket.
Is how can we, as a collective, get from that bondage of being dependent on an institution that is not beneficial to our community?
Well, I mean, I don't know how many African Americans know that WIC and a lot of those programs were started by the Black Panther Party. You know what I'm saying? So we had the ideals to support and, you know, create an infrastructure for us to help ourselves that didn't put us in a place of quote unquote modern day servitude. But like I said, when we've had so many blows, you'd have to think we're already behind the curve, at least 3 to 4 generations, on financial wealth. We're already behind the curve with men not being in the household.
They said about 200 years behind.
Yeah, and when you're looking at men not being in the household, on top of it, you have to think financially, education-wise, you know, and at some points physically. And sometimes that makes the reversal of roles of what traditional family would look like. But you see, men were incarcerated or moved out of the household, so the women had to fend for themselves and learn. If I remember, there's a statistic, I think it was last year, I can't remember who said it, that African-American women are the most educated and dynamic women in the world. We
That's
are
like
because we have gotten.
That's all like Boyce
Watson
says for stuff like that.
But do you know why? Because back in the day, Black women were not looked at initially as the threat. Black men were. So they were marginalized. While we went to school, we may have been a teacher, we may have been a nurse, we may have been a little supervisor, we may have been a manager over housekeeping, but we kept building and scaffolding and able to move, just like
American whites can move. So it wasn't until later that it was recognized, like, whoa,
wait, they're coming. You know, we got to figure something else out.
So then we had to deal with the glass ceiling and those things. But this is the mentality that we have to break out of, or at least get an education on, so that we can know what battles we're fighting. What is the sense of going to a war with guns when we've never had target practice, we've never pulled a weapon? We don't even know who the enemy is, because we weren't educated on strategy. We weren't educated on how to. We weren't educated generationally on survival.
Or we utilize the same strategy over and over again, like marching, you know, or marching to me. Or you say to me. I know marching has been a strategy that we utilized throughout the years. I know that for a fact. But however, all we did was march. We never went to step two. We never went to step three and step four and step five. We never had a alternative game plan. Okay, what do we do after the march? What do we do after we spoke the issue of police brutality to the world? What kind of, again, we have a problem. Talk about the slave syndrome. We have a problem of bringing all of these thoughts and ideas together.
Well, I think the problem is another.
I don't mean to get off the subject. I'll get back on target.
No, it's fine. I think that another problem that we have going forward is like another, I guess you could say, effect. You know, slavery was the cause, but an effect is we have a genuine distrust for one another. If you look at other cultures, you know, it doesn't matter what, they kind of stick together. I trust you before I trust anybody else outside of this culture. But for African Americans, that's not the case. You know what I'm saying? I have seen 10 Indian families live in one huge house, and each one take a bill, or each one take a portion. Somebody buys groceries, somebody pay light, somebody pay thing. They all take a small portion of the mortgage. And then guess what? They all donate for the next person to step out and buy their house, cash. Then they split the families, and they continue to do that until each person owns their own home. I've seen it in Asian communities, Hispanic communities, Caribbean communities, European communities. It has not happened in the African-American community because we have such distrust from one another. And we have reason to distrust one another because we have not been given opportunities to show we're trustworthy to one another. And when we are given those opportunities, we take the opportunity to hurt one another.
And you know what you're describing? You know what you're describing? You're describing collective economics. I don't know why we have a problem with collective economics. Everybody is on this individuality kick. And it's separate from each other. We used to say, oh, it'll take a village. Now there ain't no village.
No village. And, you know, it's sad because we grew up in a day where the village was, the village, everything was brought to the village and a decision was made. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Culturally. Everything was brought before and then a decision was made. But you have to think, we're going from that post-traumatic slave syndrome, we're going through colorism. You know, you're in the house, you're in the field, creating that separated elitist feel within a community of all people of the same color. But creating, hey, you're a little bit better because you have a little bit more color, or you're a little bit better because this grain of hair is better because it's closer. You know, so those things also play a role, because even today we deal with colorism. And
sadly, that aspect has trickled not only in the American culture, but throughout cultures throughout the world. So,
right.
That,
let me
so
ask you
I'll
this.
Give you a little. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was saying, I mean, just giving that person that little bit more to make them feel like they're more than the person next to them, you know, it's going to cause resentment. It's going to cause angst, and that's what was utilized. You know, here, I'm going to praise you and give you the better food. You know, you get to sleep in a bed as opposed to the mat on the ground or whatever. You know, just giving one a little bit more to create the jealousy, to create the resentment, to create the look that, hey, you think you're better than me. I can do this without you. I don't need you. I'm not even as black as you because I'm getting better because I have this little bit more. You know, so those are the things. And sadly, the crazy thing about it is we struggle with trying to deal with our mental health when this was a mental game from the beginning. We just did not realize we're caught up in a mental game from the beginning because all of these behaviors, they were created for us to learn how to behave in a manner in which they wanted us to do. The physical aspect came, like whippings and stuff like that, but most of it was mental.
Psychological warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to switch to discussion, okay, because we're only going to have about 10 minutes left. All right.
Okay.
How is... And in fact, I have to tell you, I am enjoying your discussion. I really am. In fact, I'm going to contact you sometime a few days later, you know, and ask you a couple things, if I may.
No problem. No problem at all.
All right. To switch the flow of the conversation, how do you think this virus is affected? Now, I know I listen to all kinds of perspectives for different black folks, whether they're political, consciousness, educators, medical field, but they all have one thing in agreement. The black community is in trouble.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But
it goes back to this old statement.
If
white folks have
already...
a cold, we got the flu.
Mm-hmm. My thing is, first of all, how many, and this is just truth. When I say that this is a mental thing, it's a mental thing. How many African Americans that you know growing up, as soon as you got a cold or the sniffles or your body ached, did you run to the hospital and say, hey, I'm not feeling well. I think I need some medicine?
I don't know any of them. I don't know, not even me.
Not many.
Chicken
doodle soup. My mother was a hypochondriac.
I had chicken doodle soup, put the Vicks on my chest, put the Vicks on
your chest. Exactly.
They called Father John's. You know, like, hey, man, you know, my mom didn't take me to, unless I had something fractured broken, and that was rare.
Exactly. So then think about that. If, you know, I was thinking about New York City. Now, you know, I'm from New York. My family is there. I've lost people that I know over the last couple of weeks to COVID, and it's just been devastating. But
really?
Think about New York.
Project.
Let's just use projects as examples.
Yeah, Ronald Rockaway, Mother Gaskin, those four different projects. Yeah, okay. I got it. I'm seeing it right now.
You know, Marcus Garvey, all those places. So let's just say somebody got on the elevator and they caught the flu. They're not feeling good. They're not feeling good. But how many people take those elevators per day? You know what I'm saying?
I said about 300.
Yeah.
Minimum.
And that's just one elevator. That's just one elevator. You know the business.
If it's working.
Multiple elevators.
If the elevator is working.
Exits. Yeah, multiple exits, multiple
elevators if they're working. And then think about if they're not working and the people holding the banisters going down the stairs after they sneezed or coughed.
Oh, God.
You know.
And those kids running up and down the hallways and all kinds of activities going on in the buildings.
Yeah. So think about that. And then think about, okay, Auntie is just not feeling well this week. You give her some soup. You make her feel better. You think she's going to be better in a couple of days. By the time you're really showing symptomology of sick, you're in a bad way already. Then let's talk about the other aspect of having health insurance. How many hospitals are going to see you without insurance? And then
not too many.
Get insurance. How many days do you have in the hospital to be sick? Can you afford the medicine once they write the prescription? Will you make it out of the hospital? These are all factors that impact.
In New York,
they're coming with truckloads to
bury the dead. And they can't even have memorial services. And Central Park is just turned into a mass unit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then think about the fact that on top of all of that of getting to the hospital, how many people do you really think call the ambulance when it costs $500 a ride, if not more, to get a ride to the emergency room at the hospital?
That's ridiculous.
You know what I'm saying? So my thing is, you know, we have so many things stacked against us in regards to accessing healthcare. We barely use healthcare to begin with because of cost, because
That's
of
true.
Not wanting to look weak.
That's true. Because we don't want, because there's a stigma in our neighborhood. We can't. That's a part of weakness. We can't take care of ourselves.
Yeah. But we're killing ourselves daily because we're not even giving into the fact that we're humans and we need to unload some of the burdens that we deal with regularly. You know, we've learned to live in trauma. We're traumatized. You know, what some people are like, oh, my gosh, did you hear about such and such? I grew up in Brownsville. Like, you seen and heard stuff every day. And we're like, okay.
Every minute, there's something going on in Brownsville.
So
I'm telling you,
so
ladies and gentlemen, she's not lying.
I didn't have a bad experience, girl. I loved my neighborhood. I loved my block. I'm not going to sit here and say it's the worst community, but Brownsville is known for getting bucks.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is,
all my
I'm
friends,
saying
I live in East New York.
We've learned to be desensitized from everything. We're desensitized from everything. So to us, what may be a big deal may not be a big deal. What may be nothing may be a real big deal to others. I learned that I did Child Protective Services for 10 years in New York. And what I've learned
is abuse is
subjective. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
There'll be times you go into a house and what you see as neglect could be a family of color hustling. So imagine people who have never had to pull things together to make a meal or things that look odd and out of place. Being the ones to make a determination whether a child can be there or not. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't understand the culture. So, you know, we face a lot of disparity on many fronts.
Yeah. You know what? We got to have this conversation again, Sister Natalie. Tell everybody how they can get in touch with you. If they have any questions, they want to buy the book. Tell us a little bit about your book. Tell a little bit about your book. I'm excited to say that I'm a best-selling author. 516-531-9540. Anybody that want to call in. All right, go ahead.
Yeah.
A lot of people listen to the show, but they don't like to call in. A couple people say, oh, you be having too many smart people on all. I say, well, intelligent. I try to teach intelligent black folks. You know,
yes.
so plug in about your book.
Well, I am a best-selling author of three different books. Actually, two or
three
earlier this year, and they're different compilations of women, strong women, and we came together with these anthologies. And I have one that's called From Glass to Stone, and just talking about transformation from places of weakness or shortcomings and overcoming that and being able to overcome our issues and be brave and transform into legends. I call us ladies living legends because we're doing things that no one thought we could do. And we're definitely impacting the majority of people that we never thought that we would be able to impact. And then we have our other book under the Naked and Unafraid banner. We did two other books, which I was so excited. And one is called I Gave Myself Permission To. A lot of times we don't give ourselves permission to do things. And I talked about, you know, transitioning and learning how to choose myself first, which we never do individually. You know, we're always self-sacrificing because that's what we've learned to do. So learning how to choose myself first in relationship came with the book I Gave Myself Permission To. And our first book was Naked and Unafraid, and we discussed some trials and things that we overcame. Mine in that first book was self-esteem and just talking about all the different things that I've transitioned through. So it's been fun writing the books and speaking on them and engaging several communities and traveling. It's been fun. Like I said, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, so I do therapy. So I do see people individually, couples, and I run groups. You know, I do a lot of training in my community, whether it's from ethics to preventing child sexual abuse. I speak on a varied amount of topics, and I support a lot of the small businesses in my community that help to protect our families and children in my community. So I have a lot going on overall, but it's always about the preservation of family for me.
Preservation of family. Well, Natalie, I really enjoyed this conversation. And
thank
you. Can set a call for me in a couple of days. It's a couple of days I want to find you. I know you're a busy woman. I like you're a busy woman going all over the place. But I really enjoy this conversation. And you can spec a call for me in a couple of days. Some ideas came in my head while you was talking. And I really, really enjoy our dialogue, homegirl. We're from the same, we chew the same blocks. We came from the same territory.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure. I'm so glad you were able to have me. And everything worked out with the system because this was fun and it was a great conversation to have.
Okay. And be safe. My sister, be very.
You too, you
very
too.
Okay.
Have a wonderful night.
You too. There you have it, folks, another week. Next week we'll be having Shango Antoine. Going to be discussing, what are you going to be discussing? History and knowledge of the black man. Okay? Last 2 weeks we've been focusing on the sisters. Now it's about the brothers. I just like to thank everyone. Continue your support. So, I am as we are. We are as I am. So, everybody, be safe and good night.